Well, good morning, good afternoon, everyone. I'm Elliot Callan, President of Prosperity Financial Group, and I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Meet the Expert. Here is where we give information out about how to manage money and how to build wealth. And today we're going to talk with Parker Waldron, who's a partner at SkyBridge, and we're going to talk about the wild west of investing today, crypto. There are fortunes that are going to be made on crypto. There are fortunes that are going to be lost on crypto. We want to make sure that everybody's educated because it is certainly one of the hottest topics out there of Bitcoin, which everybody now has heard of. But there are there's a lot to do with it, a lot of information about crypto that no one has heard of. But we're going to discuss that today, what that is, what blockchain is. And so, Parker, let me welcome you to our show.
Thank you very much, Elliot. We appreciate it. And happy to join today's session.
That's great. So let's talk a little bit about first what crypto is and how you define it. How broad is it? Because all anybody talks about on TV is the price of Bitcoin is 63,000. It was 38 3 months ago, but it was 56 5 months ago. And this is not for the faint of heart. So what exactly is crypto?
Absolutely. So I think so. We at SkyBridge have taken a pretty big stance in the crypto space today. We've been fairly public with kind of how we've adopted it, how we've grown. But to be completely fair, it took us, you know, our fair share of time to get into the space. We started researching it probably a little over 4 years ago, personally investing a little over 2 years ago, and made our first allocation at the firm level about a year and change ago. It has grown substantially. So, you know, today we have a little over 800 million invested in crypto, predominantly Bitcoin and a few other currencies across the firm. But to your point, it is a very new asset class and it is still emerging globally in terms of how people are using it and how people are viewing it. And I think to answer your question in terms of what is a cryptocurrency and how to think of it, we have to take a step back and look at the evolution of money as a whole. And so if I can take you all the way back to the earliest of civilizations, if you can humor me for that moment, we used to transact with one another using the barter system. So if you and I were exchanging goods and services, I would be bartering with you and exchanging whatever good I had for your services or vice versa. Naturally, we realized that is not the most efficient way to transact. So we evolved. We evolved the way we transact and what currencies we use to transact with another. So we evolved to shells, to stones, to beads, to gold coins, to paper dollars, printed paper dollars with US presidents on them, to digital currencies. Cryptocurrencies, in our opinion, are the next stage of this adoption as we continue to evolve how we transact with another and make that evolution more efficient. So cryptocurrencies today, there are, depending on who you speak to, roughly 6,500 plus cryptocurrencies to date. That number has grown substantially over the last handful of years. The first of which is Bitcoin, which was created back in 2009. And as I said, fast forward to today, well north of 6,500. So that number will likely continue to grow with this adoption.
Great. What does mining mean? I'm mining Bitcoin.
So mining Bitcoin is the way that the original algorithm created back in 2009 for Bitcoin. That is the way that Bitcoin is both introduced into the open market as well as approved on the blockchain. So a miner is not going out with a pick and shovel and going to some field in Montana or elsewhere and mining Bitcoin out of the ground. This is all digital. And so mining essentially is the approval or the transactions of Bitcoin going from one peer to another peer. So a miner is a third party individual or a third party group that is essentially approving that transaction and adding that transaction to the blockchain.
Okay, what is blockchain?
So think of blockchain as essentially a grid of all transactions. It is a blueprint of every transaction that is done via Bitcoin. So there are multiple different types of blockchains. If we're referring to the Bitcoin blockchain, and I go back to my example of you and I transacting with one another, if I were sending Bitcoin from myself to you, there would be a third party approval from a miner And that transaction would be added to the blockchain. And so the blockchain is a digital ledger that tracks and stores every transaction of Bitcoin all around the world.
So I'm a little bit more skeptical on this than maybe you are, because I deal in a global world where China is the emerging market, and China has just outlawed Bitcoin because they're going to come up with a digital yen, a digital yuan, excuse me. So they're going to put an end to this. Can't China, and they're really good at what they do, can't they interfere with blockchain, destroy blockchain, artificially change blockchain, this digital ledger? I mean, everything, what we've learned is everything in this world is vulnerable to some type of digital criminalism. Is that not true here?
Yeah, so it very good question. And I think probably one that many folks are focused on today, not only with the headline news out of China, but also just around broader trust and how that network operates. And so if I can, I'll answer it in two parts, because I think it is very crucial to touch on both here. So in terms of the broader blockchain security, so if you look at the history of money and how that's transacted, a trusted network is the number one thing that we need as individuals to use that currency, to use that token to transact with another. So based on the community of the blockchain, if one individual were to go in and change a single block, change the code of that block, it would therefore trigger a change in every single block of the blockchain network. So that is how, when this was originally created, a very crucial security checkpoint was to have this installment where if there is one bad actor or if there's someone who's going in and trying to alter the broader blockchain, that will trigger a change in that broader blockchain. And you can go and see which block within the broader blockchain was altered and figure out where the error was made or where the attempted error was made. In terms of China, so China made very big waves, a few times this year, one by banning mining in their country, and then two, by banning Bitcoin as a currency within its country. Just to be very clear, this is not the first time that China has tried to ban Bitcoin. They first tried back in, I think it was 2013. They've tried several times since to ban Bitcoin. If we're speaking openly, yes, they are doing this in an attempt to create their own digital yuan, which we believe very strongly that they are doing and will be doing that very soon. But you can't ban Bitcoin, in our opinion. And the reason I say that is because today there are over 150 million people around the world, individuals who own Bitcoin. In our opinion, when the user base of Bitcoin surpassed 100 million, you've entered peak velocity in terms of that network and that network's growth. So when we think about it, yes, China has decided to put a ban on Bitcoin. Is that the right or wrong decision? That's of course not us to say. They clearly have a very clear plan and action with the digital yuan being released shortly, we believe. But there are still people in China using Bitcoin. There are still wallets in China that are actively holding Bitcoin. I mean, in our opinion, they came out with that first statement a little over a month ago. They keep kind of repeating themselves. It's evident to us, in our opinion, that there is still Bitcoin being used. And when you think of Bitcoin as its nature, its true use case is that it is a unregulated, decentralized, permissionless peer-to-peer network, meaning a government cannot go in and find that Bitcoin, control that Bitcoin. That is one of its founding principles. So yes, China has made a nationwide ban, but from a headwind perspective or from a price knocking perspective, in all fairness, they've made that statement now over a month ago, have done so a few times since, and we're still pushing all time highs in terms of the resiliency of Bitcoin, I think is really a big takeaway from that aspect.
So I'm a big fan of King Dollar, US dollar being strong, viable, the currency of the world. And I know China wants to take that over to become the currency of the world.
Yeah.
I get that. Why is the US allowing Bitcoin and the other coins to exist with a competing currency on this, in this globe, in this part of the world? Why don't we just come up with our own digital dollar and get rid of all this other nonsense and become the digital global dominant player?
Yeah. So another very, very good point. And certainly no guarantees, but we at SkyBridge would indicate that there's a very good chance that that digital dollar is coming out as well. Digital dollar, digital pound, digital won, as we discussed, that evolution of money, the efficiency we use to transact with one another will continue to progress in that direction. So why would the US not ban Bitcoin? Again, I'll give you a two-part answer, but I promise I'll be succinct with it. One, it's kind of hard for them to do that at this point. If they wanted to do that 5 years ago, they would likely have a better chance. I mentioned there's 150 million people globally who are using Bitcoin, have a Bitcoin wallet today. Over 45 million of those are US domiciled. So the US population has clearly adopted Bitcoin and is using it very widely. And so for the US government to come in and try and stranglehold that at this point, we believe would be very difficult and probably an unsuccessful attempt on their part. But the second side of that is they don't necessarily need to. Like if you look at Bitcoin as a network and as a technological advancement, we liken Bitcoin a lot of times to that of the internet in terms of the technological advancement it's making, the improvements it's making. And when you look at some of the largest financial services technology companies in the US today, they are spending millions and millions, if not billions and billions of dollars, evolving their business lines, growing their product development, trying to compete and evolve with one another to allow cryptocurrencies into their platforms. If the US were to ban the internet in the late 90s, early 2000s, they would have missed out on a massive economic opportunity for those underlying companies. The exact same storyline, in our opinion, exists within Bitcoin today. They understand that this has grown to a size where they need to embrace it, adopt it. And it's very great to see that Gary Gensler, that Jerome Powell have now publicly come out and accepted Bitcoin and stated publicly, we will not be banning Bitcoin. We understand it's here to stay. We're going to work alongside it. Someone once kind of referred me to the comparison of the digital dollar and Bitcoin almost to that of the US Postal Service and FedEx. They can exist alongside each other and they can provide different use cases for different individuals.
Okay, I'm a little less optimistic about the dollar and the Bitcoin coexisting, but I get what you're saying because you can be very right on that.
Well, I was going to say, so you know, if we go into the idea of what is one of the biggest drivers to the bullish case for Bitcoin, and that for us and many ties back to the macro backdrop. And so if you look at, you know, why was Bitcoin created? Bitcoin was created coming out of the great financial crisis in 2009. Currencies around the world today, including the US, are being debased. And when you debase a currency, you are essentially debasing the country. And we believe when you look at the US dollar, not a political statement, not anything like that, just a general kind of macro statement, we believe that roughly 80% of the US of its purchasing power has been lost over the last 50 years. So in 1971, when Nixon removed the US dollar from the gold standard, we were no longer tied. We were no longer backed to anything. So the US dollar and the US government could kickstart those printing presses. And coming out of the GFC, you saw an acceleration of that process. Coming out of the global pandemic last year, you saw a further acceleration of that process. There was more money printed in June of last year than there was in the first 200 years of this country's existence. So if you look at M2 money supply being up 30% year over year, if you look at the fact that there are 38% more dollars today than there were in June of last year, traditionally in that scenario, investors look towards hard assets as a way to hedge out against that currency debasement. Real estate, gold, other commodities. Bitcoin has emerged from an institutional investor allocation as a very viable and useful allocation tool for that currency debasement. So we are not saying that the US dollar will not continue to be the global leader in terms of a currency. We do believe that will be the case. We're not doing ourselves any favors, we would argue, given how much we've printed and how much we've debased the currency over the last year. But that doesn't mean that Bitcoin can't serve as a alternative to a gold or alternative to a real estate allocation as a way for investors to alleviate some of that currency debasement, given that Bitcoin cannot be devalued. There's no central government or governing body that can devalue what you own in Bitcoin.
And I know you're obviously very bullish on Bitcoin. Are you bearish on all the other currencies? So we should just invest in Bitcoin. Should we drop, you know, Ethereum, and we drop all these other things and just focus on one?
Yeah, no. So yes, we do have a bullish view towards Bitcoin. So, you know, I don't mean to skew the conversation that way, but we definitely believe that when you look at those 6,500+ cryptocurrencies to date, it's very hard to believe that all of those will be around in the next 5, 10, 15 years. Going back to my comparison of crypto to the internet, right? If you think back to the late 90s or early 2000s, every single company was restructuring, rebranding, renaming their company to attach themselves to the dot-com boom. That was the way to kind of hatch their wagon onto that ride. The same thing is happening in the cryptocurrency space today. You are seeing a fantastic growth and adoption within the cryptocurrency environment. And as a result, there are a ton of new coins, a ton of new creations of coins, all claiming to have different use cases and technology. You know, not to make an investment statement, but, you know, Dogecoin, Shiba, some of these newer coins, to be honest, we are staying away from. We don't believe that the use cases will be there and that it is more of a fad or a trend than anything substantial. Bitcoin, Ethereum, Algorand, Cardano, these leading coins, there are very interesting use cases. The technology for them are very impressive. And you can make the case that they do have different values for different investors and different business lines. At least at SkyBridge, we are trying to focus on some of those leading coins where the reality of this is a very emerging new asset class. It is still very much in its infancy. And so as a result of that, we feel most comfortable going with what we know most about. And some of the technology behind some of these leading players is impressive enough to us where it is worth going into there. So we are investing in Bitcoin, clearly. We are investing in Algorand. We are investing in Ethereum. Looking at a few of the other leading coins, but we are staying away from the Dogecoins and the Shibas of the world just because it's, at this case, it's hard for us to see where the value will be for those in 10, 15 years.
Well, this is an interesting week in the Bitcoin world because for the first time, you can invest in Bitcoin through ETFs.
Yeah.
And I know that your firm, through First Trust, is offering an ETF in that world too. I don't know if Bitcoin is part of that. I know a few other people are offering it. What are you doing and why and how does it belong in a client's portfolio?
Yeah, so what we've found, and I won't make this a SkyBridge infomercial, but you know, we as I said, we've taken a pretty big footprint into the digital asset space and have grown our business line pretty substantially in that area. And we've found a lot of interesting feedback from our investors. So we work closest with high net worth, ultra high net worth individuals, and we have institutional Bitcoin and Ethereum funds where we're taking care of the security and the custody of your Bitcoin or Ethereum. We have direct exposures in our fund of hedge fund portfolios. But honestly, what we found is that a large portion of investors at this point are trying to get more comfortable with their first step. And we found that the first allocation to Bitcoin is often the hardest for high net worth individuals. So the ETF that we launched is actually more of a kind of a broader digital asset ecosystem ETF, and not a lot of buzzwords there, but what I mean is that we're trying to provide access to not just Bitcoin or Ethereum, but the companies and the infrastructure that are building that network and building that adoption story. The news that you're referring to is the ETF for Bitcoin that was basically a approved this week. You know, that is a futures ETF, so that is not the actual, you know, standalone Bitcoin ETF that we have applied for. There are 11 other firms in the US that have applied for that Bitcoin ETF. Very hard to predict. We think that will hopefully be maybe mid to late next year, but that is a moving target to say the least. This growth or this announcement is in the futures space and very different than owning it direct, but it is still a huge step forward. And not only from an adoption standpoint, again, if we think from our own thesis, that adoption narrative is very crucial, which we can touch on a little bit if you'd like. But because of that ETF structure, naturally, we believe that will entice more traditional investors to invest in Bitcoin because of that ease of use liquidity feature of an ETF, as opposed to owning it in a private fund or owning it via an exchange like Coinbase, where they may have to struggle with security or access. The second side of that is more so on the regulatory side, where the fact that the SEC and the federal government has approved a futures ETF, more regulation, the better, in our opinion, for this space right now. So that is as we try and read between the lines of what they're releasing publicly and whatnot, very good step forward for where we think they'll go in the next year.
Okay, so if I'm dealing with clients, and let's assume these clients are moderate to growth-oriented people with mm-hmm. some means, and if I said I want to put 3%, 4%, 5% into the new world of currency, the new world order here, am I being too aggressive or not aggressive enough?
Yeah, the age-old question for every asset class, unfortunately. So we would say what we've guided our clients towards, which are I would say, honestly, probably a very similar characteristic to what you just outlined. We've guided them towards a 2-3% allocation for those comfortable making that initial step and understand the volatility, understand the risks associated with it. There are others who have put that much higher. For example, Paul Tudor Jones, fairly legendary investor across the spectrum. He's publicly stated that anything shy of 5% is essentially bearish in terms of your allocation to crypto and to Bitcoin. So we're comfortable in that 2-3% range. In terms of how clients want to get access there, again, I think there are different ways to get exposure at this point. We've found that the most comfortable first step is through various fund structures, as opposed to owning the Bitcoins or the Ethereum coins directly through Coinbase. Every investor is going to have a different feel towards that. But we found that 2-3% kind of fund structure, more comfortable first step, is where we've seen the most traction so far from a lot of the investors we work with.
All right. So Parker, one more question for you. We've been speaking Absolutely. With Parker Waldron here from Skybridge Capital, and with help from First Trust. And that is, people have been talking about regulation coming. Yeah. That's going to put you out of business, or that's going to help the business develop even more.
Yeah.
Two very different sides of a coin, you might say. So is regulation good, warranted, excessive? You're asking for what we all hate, which is greater government intervention.
Yeah. So I think I would start, Elliot, by saying anyone considering an allocation to Bitcoin or a cryptocurrency, regulation needs to be triple underlined and circled on their risk considerations. And that's not to scare people off, but it is a very new asset, and they need to understand what lies within that regulation bucket. I would say there's a very big difference between regulation and over-regulation. Over-regulation is what China is doing. It's what India tried to do. It's what Russia tried to do. It's trying to completely remove or eliminate Bitcoin from their society. We believe that's over-regulation. That's a little bit too much on that side of the scale. Regulation is what the U.S. is currently doing. Regulation, we would argue, is a very good thing for Bitcoin and for cryptocurrencies today. When you look at the institutional adoption of Bitcoin, the brighter the spotlight we can shine on the industry, the better. And some of those more conservative asset allocators historically will get more comfortable, will likely feel more appreciative of that regulation and will guide their way towards an allocation if you see more regulation. If you look at your client's tax returns, right, they will now have to check off if they invest in a cryptocurrency. As we, as asset allocators, read between the lines there, that's our opinion of the IRS saying, we need to make this a part of our broader tax mandate, because look at how many U.S. citizens are allocating to cryptocurrencies now. We need to make sure we're participating and we're tracking this. That's a very good sign that a government body like the IRS is adopting it in that way. We talked about Gary Gensler, who was the SEC chair. We talked about Jerome Powell, both of them publicly admitting that they do not want to ban Bitcoin. They want to grow with Bitcoin and adopt it. that is a very good sign of regulation, and more regulation is good for Bitcoin at this point. Now, of course, there's always the possibility of that going too far, but from where we sit today, that will only continue the adoption that we've seen so far. And when we talked about the thesis of Bitcoin, we briefly touched on the macro aspect of it. The adoption story is really the second biggest part. The retail growth is tremendous, and you're seeing that in a very big way. I mean, you're getting 150 million users around the world today. That number is going up by over a million users every single week for Bitcoin ownership, which is a fantastic supply-demand mismatch if you have a 21 million fixed supply of Bitcoin. But the institutional side, is, as we all know, is where you can really see a lot of momentum swing for any asset class. And talking about regulation, you know, there are three major insurance companies today in the U.S. that invest in Bitcoin. There are five plus major college endowments that invest in Bitcoin. Of the 40,000 public companies around the world today, there are roughly 32, to our knowledge, that currently invest in Bitcoin. And so, you know, we kind of sarcastically ask ourselves the question, right, is that number going to go up or is that number going to go down for each of those categories? And our belief is that you will see that institutional adoption continue, and more regulation you could spotlight will help that institutional adoption grow from there. You know, the last thing I would say is El Salvador, the first sovereign nation to adopt Bitcoin. You know, it's hard for us to see other dollarized nations, other nations that have pegged their currency to the US dollar, not adopt Bitcoin as a way to free themselves of the control of our US currency. So if you can continue that oversight from the US government's end and add a fair amount of regulation, which I'm sure many would argue is trying to thread some sort of needle in that, it's hard to believe that institutional growth won't continue to grow as we get more clarity around what the asset can do.
Great. Well, Parker, I want to thank you very much for joining us. Today, we had a great conversation about Bitcoin, crypto, blockchain, and related topics to that. It's been great. Really appreciate that. And love to have you back on anytime in the future because it's an ongoing conversation.
No, I certainly appreciate that, Elliot. Exciting conversation for a lot of us today. So really do appreciate the time and would love to come back on anytime you'll have me. So thank you very much and hope you enjoy the rest of the afternoon.
Good. And you've been listening to an episode of Meet the Expert where we help our clients build and manage wealth. And we look forward to seeing you again. Have a great day.